been the time when the oceans drank Atlantis and the rise of the sons of Arius.
No, those are the Mexican ones.
Those are the Mexican headphones. We bought him two sets.
Two in case one breaks.
Two sets of Mexican headphones. A troubled brow.
It is I, his chronicler, who alone can tell thee of his saga. Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
We were making it for young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away. Take it away.
Hell yeah.
Link
episode.
Up.
Link it up. Episode
106.
106, isn't it? That's a whole lot. Anyway, we have had such a popular demand over the last week for our newest member, the female geek, that we've decided to devote our entire show to her.
Just call me a geek.
And absolutely, it's a term of it's a term of endearment. So we're going to turn the entire show over to Dan's wonderful wife and our favorite Slurpee lady, Erin. There you go.
Hey, thank you. I am amazed at how professional that intro makes you guys sound.
We're not professional.
It makes you sound that way.
Not that we are that way.
Not that we are anything.
It gives the false impression.
Well, yeah, but it's very impressive. Who did that for you?
A fan.
I
can't even remember the guy's name right now.
Oh,
people actually listen.
He left. Dan just walked out. I don't know where he went. I'm surrounded by monitors full of things. I have no idea what they mean.
He had to do a pee-pee run.
This could be a long show, since I have no idea what y'all do up here. That's not true.
We talk about Linux, Aaron.
Yes, and other things.
You can talk about whatever you want.
Oh,
anything
I can?
You want.
What should I talk about?
How about Firefly?
Firefly is doing Nobody came to see it with me this weekend, except for my lovely and talented husband,
Link.
I wanted to, but I busted a tooth. So
what happened?
I broke one of my teeth. And I was in severe pain all weekend long.
What were you doing that broke a tooth?
Eating.
What were you thinking, foolish man?
Just yeah, imagine that. You have to eat sometimes.
You've been having Granite Crunch again?
No, I don't even remember what it was. I just, like, Saturday morning I was in, you know, a lot of pain. And then by the afternoon it was absolutely amazingly severe.
So and it then, wasn't a crunch, oh my God, I broke my
tooth? No, it wasn't like... It kind of snuck up on me, you know? And like I said, by Saturday night, I was beside myself and couldn't even think. And
it was all the excitement of Saturday morning,
yeah.
That's why.
Sunday morning, I was... By the time Alan came to get me on Sunday morning, I was probably 30 aspirin into my regime.
And a paper cut would have killed you.
Probably,
you
yeah.
Bled to death.
Yeah. No, seriously, probably. And I'm absolutely serious when I'm talking about 30 aspirin.
He was a bit sedated.
It says not to exceed like 12 and 24 hours or something like that. I had to be on 20 or 30.
Can you get high on aspirin? Is that a...
No.
You feel a little
No, you just
odd.
Become numb.
Yeah.
Gives you an ulcer.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then your insides come out. But did you see the dentist?
Yep, I went to the dentist on Monday. And apparently they won't do anything without, like, putting you on antibiotics for a week. So I'm on antibiotics now and 800 milligrams of ibuprofen every 6 hours.
Oh.
Nice.
So.
Nice.
Anything you can share?
It was kind of neat for a while, but, you know, the whole, you know, flying sensation wears off after a few hours.
So, Aaron,
two or three times into the ibuprofen. Doesn't do nothing for you.
You've been running Ubuntu for a couple weeks now, right?
Yeah, and I'm supposed to talk about that intelligently. So ask me some questions because it's... I don't want to say it's all the same to me because I'll make people very, very unhappy and you'll get hate mail.
No,
but
it's not the same to you, right? Because you run... What did you run before? Are you on Slackware or Debian? Or?
Debian.
Okay.
And now it's Ubuntu. It's still with the KDE desktop.
Mm-hmm. Do you notice it being any? I mean, other than the fact that it looks different.
It starts up a lot faster. A whole lot faster.
Same machine starts faster.
Not really. In fairness, since it's been on there, I have not been online and on the computer as much as I was because I've been working brutal hours. So I haven't had a ton of opportunity to pick it apart. Totem Movie Player will not work, which is annoying to me.
Try caffeine.
What am I using? No.
Zine.
Zine. And that works fine. So
caffeine is pretty nice, too. That plays everything, caffeine.
I used the preview window for a couple things, but I haven't really gotten into it. And has anyone found out, is it true of the whole media player codecs, you can't play DVDs on Linux legally?
Legally.
That is true.
Yeah, it's a small technicality, yeah.
It's not necessarily true. You can play them legally if you own your copy of the codecs. So, like, if you have Windows, you know, if you own a copy of Windows and you own a copy of, like, a DVD player under Windows,
you're legal.
You would have a legal copy of that codec.
Okay.
To use, right? I mean, that sort of makes sense to me.
Sounds right, yeah.
I don't think they could really pursue it much farther past that. I, however, do not have any Windows.
Confess, Link.
And I play DVDs under Linux, and they can come and get me
now,
if they want to.
Now they're coming to get you.
Yep.
The jackbooted thugs will be knocking on your door at any minute now. So while we're doing this, Link, what are you tapping away on?
Just answering the IRC chat.
Oh, what terrible things are people saying?
They want to know if I'm going to have to get a root canal.
Are you?
That's what they want to do, but I'm probably going to have them just pull the damn tooth out.
Oh, don't do it.
Yeah, because you know what? It's
that'll just add to the redneck
it's
deal.
Faster. No, if you pull a tooth, if I pull a tooth and get a bridge, it's faster, cheaper, and it's less painful. And think about it. If you get a root canal, right? I got to save up. No, seriously, I have to save up money to be able to pay for this procedure.
It's the smell.
It takes all day long for them to do it, and they're in there cranking on your nerve on your tooth.
Burning
I don't
bone.
Care what anybody says. You cannot get enough pain medication for somebody to be digging around inside your face for that long.
Nothing
if
like,
they pull it out, it goes, and it's done.
Nothing like the
you
smell
know?
Of burning
it's not there.
Bone.
You heal it up a little bit. You put a bridge on. Hey. You're good to go.
See, I've had a root canal.
Okay, you can now spit.
Yeah,
that's right. Rinse.
I have a horror of having a tooth pulled. It just seems I've never had a tooth pulled, and it just horrifies me to even think about. So, I went through the root canal, and it didn't take all day. If it takes all day, you might want to get a new dentist.
I don't know. Not me. If it takes 15 minutes, it's all day to me in a dentist chair. You know, you're already like they strap you in, and
I have a really good one
they have
there,
drills
in Bethlehem that's really good.
Your face.
Rather painless and all.
Oh, that's always a plus. Yeah, painless.
Because I like can't stand dentists, and this guy doesn't. I've never felt any of the work that he's done.
Well,
not even the needle for the Novocaine.
Oh, he is good.
He's good.
He's good. How do we get to talk about the tooth thing? All right, new topic. Somebody, new topic. Oh, Serenity. We did go see Serenity on Sunday, although nobody came. The theater was pretty full. It made about another $2.5 million this weekend. It's number 11. It hasn't, it might have some legs still. It might go another couple weekends. Hopefully it'll top out at about 35 or 40 million. It's not a huge hit. It's not, you know, setting the world on fire, which is unfortunate because it is a really good movie, but it's a niche. It was marketed, you know, to a niche market, and, I'm disappointed that it hasn't done better because I love Firefly. I love Serenity. I have the box set. I've become a huge Firefly fan in about 4 weeks. And
now you're pissed because there's nothing more coming out.
Well, you know, I tend to jump into losing causes. I mean, before this, my big thing was Enterprise. And, you know, we all know how well that ended.
And before that, she married Dan.
And before that.
I wanted to say that, but I was waiting because I saw
it
in your
coming.
Face.
And we all know how that ended, you know? No, that's terrible. Speaking of Enterprise, I know Dan has mentioned my affection for Connor Trinneer.
Yes.
And he and his wife had a baby a few days ago. So
who had a baby?
Connor. Connor Chenier had a baby. So
she says Connor, like, you know, like Dan, you know, they're best friends or something. You know, he came over last night.
Shh, we're not talking about that.
Now, Aaron, you went
She speaks of him as my wife does with Tim McGraw.
Oh, yeah, the whole Tim. Yes, I went to Dragon Con.
Dragon Con is one of the biggest sci-fi conventions in the country.
It was huge. I had a really good time, and it scared the shit out of me. I'm not great in crowds, and when those crowds are dressed like stormtroopers and vampires and Klingons, and every other costume you could imagine, and some that I couldn't, frankly, until I saw them, it was overwhelming. I mean, I had a very good time. I went to the panels and stuff I wanted to go to, but as far as walking around, I got real overwhelmed. I mean, it's 30,000 people, and 18,000 of them are, I don't want to say freaks. It's not nice. It's not nice.
How dare you judge?
That's
and
funny.
You know what?
I'm not judging. I'm a freak myself. So.
God bless them for having a good time and having the self-confidence to weigh 400 pounds and wear that outfit in public. I mean, that's great. I'm seriously, that's great because they looked like they were having a really good time. I stuck mostly to the Star Trek stuff, a little bit of Firefly stuff, and a little bit of comic stuff, but that's not really my thing.
Was there anything about the Battlestar Galactica?
Number 6 was there.
Ooh.
Yeah. She's cute. She's a tiny little thing, though. She weighs 80 pounds soaking wet.
She looks tall, though.
No, not really. You know what? Everyone looks tall on TV, and everyone is short. Everyone who's an actor, they're all short.
I don't look tall on TV. I look, you know, like a mushroom.
Speaking of mushrooms, I found like a 20-pound mushroom in my backyard growing.
Shrooms.
Hello.
I'm gonna cut it off and take a picture of it. I'll put it up on my blog.
He used to be part of the Conan fan club.
Fan club.
Oh my god! And well, now you see how we ended up together because geeks gravitate towards each other.
See,
I
and
guess.
She was just saying, wasn't she was just upset at me for calling her a geek?
I wasn't upset, not at all.
Did you call me a geek?
I was joking. I'm absolutely. there's a geek test circulating the internet, and I scored like an 87%. So
now that's impressive,
or depressing, depending on your point of view. Speaking of geeks, Dan played.
That was a good segue, too. Yeah. By the way,
Dan played a round of Dungeons and Dragons this weekend.
Ooh,
Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Ooh,
I haven't done that since
college. He took his 20-sided die, and they played Dungeons and Dragons, and they ate pizza. It was very cute. What are you doing over there?
Looking for some stuff.
Well, save me. I don't
he's looking for his other die.
He wants the 60-sided die.
I had the crystal die over here.
But he needs the little leather pouch with the elven characters embroidered on it. Elvish script, whatever it's called. And then he'll be cool enough.
I got a starter question.
Gene, I feel bad. All we bought him was headphones.
Oh, yeah. Mexican headphones.
Does the Trekkie versus Trekkers debate, is it real? Are they to Trek people, is it that much of a big deal? What the hell they're called?
Well, about 10% of Trek fans make the other 90% look really bad. I don't give a shit.
I don't give a shit either.
You know, and I'm a original series and Enterprise fan. Voyager and Deep Space Nine were a big blur, and Next Generation, I've completely forgotten about.
Deep Space Nine was better, I thought, but they kept moving it around so much, yeah. I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on after a while.
And I watched the first two seasons of Deep Space Nine, which I guess were the boring seasons, and I said, the hell with this. I give up. This is just so boring. And then apparently it got good.
Now, you're a dedicated fan because I watched the first two episodes of Deep Space Nine, which were boring as hell, and that was it for me. So.
Well, I always thought it was good, but now all of a sudden it started showing up at, like, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturdays.
Yeah.
I'm not home to watch this anymore, and I lost what the hell was happening
it's
all the time.
Well, and that's the beauty of TiVo now. Although, yes. Enterprise is doing really well, really, really well in syndication. It's one of the top-rated syndicated shows.
Mm-hmm.
Not that and a nickel will buy you anything. But and Voyager, I watched about 15 minutes of one episode, and that Neelix dude, that short alien guy showed up, and I was like, I'm out of here. Forget
this.
Guy. No way, and never watched it again. Trekkies versus Trekkers, I think one of them is a fan of the original series and one of them is like a fan of all Trek, but I don't know. I don't know. There are some scary, scary Trek fans out there. And I'm not one of them. I don't own a costume.
You didn't get dressed up as an Orion slave
oh,
girl?
Oh, jeez, no. Although, Patrick, you would be shocked. Women who are twice as wide as me, as two of me put together.
Or Orion slave girls.
Oh, yeah. Or wearing outfits made entirely of what appeared to be dental floss. I mean,
oh, man.
Unbelievable.
Outfits of dental floss?
What?
I missed something.
Outfits of dental floss. And she was going to show us pictures. That's what I wanted to see. Yeah.
On 400-pound women?
sounds like sounds like Easton. Sounds like downtown Easton.
Downtown Easton.
Oh, jeez. What's going on in downtown Easton that I'm not aware of?
Oh. All the freaks.
Oh,
That's where they go after Dragon Con.
Oh, it is? To downtown Easton? Oh, anyway. Look who's back.
Look, it's Dan the Man. So what you didn't notice anything back to Linux? You didn't notice
Linux.
Anything, you know, that... You know, you were impressed with or irritated with the Switch. I mean, other than the fact that you probably weren't expecting the Switch since Dan was just trying to do an upgrade and your computer and not working.
And he tried to slide that one right past me, which was very funny. He's like, oh, I'm just putting some new stuff. It's going to be a little while longer. He tried to play it so cool. But
yeah, that whole I what did you do? That whole I wiped out your partition, you know.
I had
that
to destroy your computer in order
to save
it. It was a planned
thing.
And I'm letting you guys down on this front because I'm supposed to have something intelligent to say. It looks a little different, but it's still KDE on the desktop. What am I supposed to notice?
Well, we're just looking for your honest opinion, you know?
My honest opinion is... The touchpad seems to be a little jittery. I have a harder time. That's actually true. I have a harder time controlling the movements of the pointer on the screen with a touchpad. It seems to kind of skitter all over the place.
I never have the problem when I use permission.
Well, okay.
No, I'm just saying. I never have the problem when I use that.
I noticed the touchpad sensitivity is much higher, and I thought you turned it down, but...
It doesn't seem to want to work. Adjustable for the KDE menu.
You know, or maybe I should just stop drinking. I don't know.
That could be it.
Yeah, we'll try sobriety. Maybe that will help.
Nah, drink more.
Drink more, and then it'll... Okay.
Drink all, more, and it doesn't matter whether it's broken or not, you know?
The jerkiness just becomes a blur.
Yeah. Oh, is that... It's a little skittery, but it's... I figured it was just something I would adjust to, and...
I can just see it now.
I'm falling.
The first visual representation of the night, and Patrick was not videotaping it. Yes, Patrick is videotaping these lovely gentlemen for and my lovely filthy house for. And if I would have known you were coming over, I would have cleaned.
I would have ruined the surprise then.
Yes, that's true too. What?
Dan, you got to talk to
Dan's,
the mic.
Dan's laughing.
Oh, I hate
talking to the mic.
Because Gorkon said nipple on IRC, so Dan's like, ha ha, he said nipple.
Nipple.
I don't like, I don't have one. I don't have an eraser, nipple. But I've used them and I don't particularly like them. Are they something you have to get used to? Or I see little.
Hi there, come on.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Link. He's dying to say something.
Uh-oh.
No.
We got the whole family in here now.
Oh, I think this might be my cue to leave. Little girls.
It's
are...
your cue to leave. She wants to see what you're doing, Mom.
The dog's
going to
come in.
The dog's
It's the whole family.
Check it out. The cat with no eye, with one eye.
Well, you got to know wherever I go is where the kids and the dog are going to
so
end up.
So for you, it's just KDE and KDE one way or the other. And
say something.
It's about the same. It's not slower.
No, it's
faster.
Probably a smidge faster.
Mm-hmm.
My picture load time is sometimes a little slower if I'm doing something online that's real image intensive, but nothing that I sit around and tear my hair out over. But I surf the internet and I use word processing a little bit. I'm not a power user, and I'll be the first to admit it.
There's nothing wrong with that.
That's fine.
Oh, now it's getting really bad. All right. Now this is getting out of hand. And if that's what you think that is, you need to go buy, you need to read a book or something, or go all talk right. to a nice
that's
doctor.
A magazine. That's
yes.
what it is.
Yep, the dog is here now too.
All right. Well, it's my that's my cue to leave.
Everybody out.
Good night. This was fun.
And there you have it. Thank you, Aaron, for coming and telling us about
all Anarchy Breaks Loose,
Dragon Con, and
the kids, the dog, everybody.
Your experiences with Ubuntu Breezy, right? It is. She is. You are running Breezy, right?
No,
she running Hori.
Warty.
Really?
No, Hori. What do I say? Warty.
Yeah, Warty's kind of old.
Before we
do the Breezy upgrade, man. Breezy's
before we bring up our guest, I want to weigh in on some
thank
Ubuntu.
Thank you, Slurpee Lady.
Ubuntu
thank
issues.
Thank you for Slurpee.
Did you listen to the Linux podcast?
Bam. No.
No.
I haven't done anything. I really have been, you know.
Well, you said the Linux podcast.
Insanely busy all week, so.
What show are you talking about?
The GNU Linux podcast.
Yes. Show.
He brought up some really valid points, I thought, about Ubuntu, stuff that I've been thinking about the past couple of days.
It's not all roses?
As I've been using it. What?
The honeymoon's over? It's not
all
roses?
Yeah, the honeymoon is over. I've been thinking, you know, I really wish I could find that distribution that has the simplicity and configurability of Slackware, but the ease of like Ubuntu or Debian package management system. Because I really love Slackware, but I just got so sick of compiling everything and then having to go through hell to get like transcode or
right.
or Cinelera.
Right.
So then I moved to Ubuntu, and it's like everything, you know, it's like the opposite end of Slackware almost. Everything. And Debian was kind of like the same thing. My problem that I keep coming back to this is the package management system. Always, always, no matter what distribution I'm using, it's either the lack thereof or the iron fist of the package system. You know, because like
Iron fist. Dan's going to talk about getting fisted by Ubuntu.
Because you know, like I'll go out and I'll grab some stuff. That they don't have a new, like PityV. I pulled that down again, and I had to go through hell to get some of the packages on PityV. And then, you know, it's like I installed Opera from the Debian package, and then I installed IAXCOM from the Debian package. And now whenever I use Synaptic, it wants to uninstall those packages, you know, because it can't find the Ubuntu or the Debian equivalent of an Ubuntu package.
Mm-hmm.
So it says the dependency doesn't exist. So its method of fixing this is to uninstall the software I installed. And, you know, when I run apt-get, it's always bitching because there's missing dependencies. And it's, like, not critical stuff. And I know I could probably set it to ignore it, but I don't want to, you know. And I agree with what John had said about that, that I really like Ubuntu, but they've gone off, like, way off the Debian track. So you really can't use Debian packages on Ubuntu because they're dependency issues. I mean, you can have the same damn package, but it's named differently.
Canonix.
So why don't you just use Debian?
Thing I don't like about that, I really like Debian, but it's so old.
Canonix.
And I don't want to run Etch because I keep hearing horror stories that
yep.
eventually your system's going to fall apart
yeah.
until they fix it.
That's
so
what I
don't,
hear too.
You know,
like it's a time bomb, you know. Hey, you can run it for today. Tomorrow, it's going to blow up on the next apt-get, you know.
The new version of Canonix is coming out in the next couple weeks.
And I don't want to run Canonix because if I run Canonix, all I ever hear from Pat is Canonix, Canonix. No, I thought about
seriously,
that.
Seriously, try it, man.
I did try. Remember, I tried Canonix.
But you had an old version.
But yeah, I did, and I upgraded. That's another thing I don't want. I don't want a distribution that every time an upgrade comes out, I got to wipe out my system.
You don't have to.
I know I don't have to. But then, you know.
So you're right back to Slackware.
Yeah, I'm right back. I keep coming back to Slackware. Now, I did think about Arch Linux. Like, Canonix and Arch Linux.
What about Vector or something like that?
Well, it's Vector Slackware.
It's Slackware.
Essentially. That's even less Slackware than Slackware.
Yeah, it's Slackware Lite. With Ice Window Maker.
See, I don't know. Maybe Arch. I'll try that. But another thing I was thinking about, and this is here comes the heresy. All right. I said, you know what? I played around with GNOME, and I really don't like GNOME. I'm sorry.
You're here.
I want to like GNOME.
I don't.
But GNOME just pisses me off. I want to like it so much. I like GTK applications.
So do I.
But it's the most god-awful configuration system.
It's a pain in the ass to freaking get to work the way you want it to.
GConf Editor is the worst idea. And there's no reason why I should have to, you know, if you're going to make a desktop environment, I should not have to hack, like, a file to such an extent down on the command line if you use GConf Editor so I can get Spatial Nautilus to not open everything in a new window.
It's ridiculous.
Just use it like the old way.
Why bother using Nautilus as your file manager?
But you don't really have a choice with that with GNOME.
Sure you do.
You can change it, but again, it's a pain in the ass.
Just install rocks and use rocks. I mean, that's what I do on my workstation at work.
Right, but when you have both certain applications, if you bring up, will pull up Nautilus.
Not if you open them with rocks. Like if you're surfing your file system with rocks, that's all you need to do.
What I'm saying about GNOME is, if you're going to distribute a desktop environment with a distribution of Linux, and you distribute one that's as broken as GNOME is, it's just a bad. I really want to like GNOME, and you know what? And I listen to the GNU Linux User Show, and I play around with my wife's laptop, and I say, maybe I should try running KDE for a while, because there. I keep thinking about it. I look at this, I say, there are about what 5-7 applications I use all the time, okay? I use those all the time on my system. All the other stuff I might never even touch.
Right.
I don't even know what's there anymore. Because under Fluxbox, you know, I don't have an accurate menu of everything that's on there. But if
you
I ran
put the stuff on there that you want to run on there.
Right. But if I ran KDE, I might find some other stuff
KDE,
that I haven't
KDE,
used.
KDE, the best application besides Conker. Conker is fantastic. Besides a file manager, where you can do local directories, you could do FTPs, SSH, you could do Samba shares, you could use it as a web browser. It's a fantastic program, Conqueror. The other great application is Digicam. Great application. That's a KDE application. You could still use all your all the other applications from the GNOME world without any problems, like GRIP or GIMP. It integrates okay. You know, the interoperability is pretty good. I like KDE. I don't have any problems with it.
All right, so why not try Kubuntu then?
I have KDE. I have Kubuntu on there. I have the Kubuntu system. I installed
that
on my wife,
too. Yes, but just because you install KDE on Ubuntu does not make it necessarily Kubuntu.
No, they have the. If you run Ubuntu and you can, in Synaptic or apt or whatever you want to use, you can pull down the Kubuntu project and put it on there. I found the Kubuntu project more limited than the regular KDE stuff. I had to add a whole bunch of KDE stuff on
the installer there. Sucks in Kubuntu. The last version, I tried it, and my system, I have no problems getting any other distro on there. Kubuntu, man, took a big dump when I was doing the install.
Yeah, but have you tried the new one? Because, like, they came out, they're on time now, and so is Edubuntu. That's going now on time, I think, with the Ubuntu releases. So I think they have
have no need to
they're all new stuff coming out.
Well, you know, and to top it all off, that remote upgrade I did on the server from at work,
mm-hmm.
although it works and it's okay, X no longer runs on it.
Awesome.
And I'm trying to figure. It seems like it didn't install a certain font package because it keeps coming back and saying can't find font fixed, and I'm trying to go through what the hell is missing. It's just really odd. I don't care. I'm probably going to wipe it out and reinstall Debian. Install Debian on that anyhow.
Try Canonix, man.
Well, I don't know. I'd rather.
Why don't
Debian
you just install Slackware and be done with it, dude?
Well, here's what I need one to do at work. I need to get Apache with Mod Perl. And if you ever try doing compile Apache with Mod Perl, it's a real big pain in the ass. So I figured I'd just do Ubuntu. You know, on my Ubuntu system.
But wait a minute. Isn't that already in the Apache? You just got to disable the stuff.
No, right? No. Not in Slackware. It doesn't have Mod Perl.
Are you sure?
Uh-huh. It has capabilities to run certain some Perl and CGI, but Mod Perl is not in Slackware.
No, because that's when I was doing the MP3 server, there was a whole bunch of shit I had to compile in there to do that.
Right, and it's a big pain in the butt.
Yeah, it was.
So I figured, you know, oh, I just apt-get it with Ubuntu, right? And then I ended up with three different Apaches. I got Apache 1.3, I got Apache with Mod Perl, and I have Apache 2. And there's three different Apache startup files now in the init directory, init.d directory. I'm like, what awesome. The hell
what
is
a mess.
That? All I wanted was Apache with Perl, Mod Perl, and PHP support so I could start playing around with some stuff. But no, and I had to get three separate ones. Then it was a bitch because there's three different configuration files.
Dude, if you're just going to do a server, do vanilla Debian, man.
Well, I should have. But see, I didn't plan on doing I wanted to do the Linux terminal server stuff, but then I wanted to try out the metadot portal. See, that requires Mod Perl, so I installed Mod Perl. Then I had to use cPAN to install all these packages, but I didn't have the proper developmental libraries.
My blog,
so I had to track those down.
My blog,
a nightmare.
I'm running Debian with Apache 2.0. It's got PHP, it's got Perl, it's got everything I need on there. It runs fine.
You have Mod Perl.
Yeah, Mod Perl's on there.
Perl, but Mod Perl's different from Perl.
Mod Perl's in there.
That's what I probably should have done. Yeah. It was a nightmare.
On Debian, you should be able to just...
No, I'm talking about Ubuntu.
Oh, you should be able to just...
Now, see, Dingus, thinking back too much back in the Slackware days, had to get all these extra modules for the metadot to install for the Perl. So I used cPAN, which wasn't that bad. But I could have just gotten them, I guess, from the repositories... But, apparently they're named lib whatever you want something.
Well, lib whatever you want something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Getting near that time.
All right, let's just find this guy's number.
It's on the email.
Yeah.
What's the deal with Droops and Infonomicon? He's not going to be doing Infonomicon anymore?
Apparently not.
So he's just going to do the Twat podcast and the video show, right?
Yep.
The video stuff is cool, man. He's got some really cool stuff on there. Iron Geeky, that guy knows his stuff, man. He's really good, you know.
Yeah.
Security stuff.
Did you listen to the Jason Scott one? I really liked
that. Which one was that? The one he's driving around in the car?
Yeah.
That was interesting.
I liked that a lot.
And if Dan likes it,
it's got to be
know
good.
It's good.
I hope this works. Am I supposed to be using... What am I supposed to be using?
Asterisk.
Okay.
Kwong's phone number.
Dun, dun, dun. What do you think, Link?
I say do it.
You see, this guy did realistic slums for his training set.
Does that look right?
Give it a whirl, man. If it's a Chinese restaurant, we'll hang up.
You like a fried rice?
I didn't get a chance to talk about Go IAX?
Yes. We'll get to it.
Not much to talk about anymore, unfortunately.
No, I have inside information on that, actually.
Hello. No one is available to take your call. Please leave a message after the tone.
This is the Linux Link Tech Show.
I turned it off. Don't worry about leaving a message.
Neat.
Well, call
okay,
back in a
well,
few minutes and see what happens.
Give it a few minutes.
Give it a couple minutes and call back. So what were you saying about Go IAX?
What is that?
Go IAX, a guy who put out an IAX service there that you can, an asterisk box I think he's running.
Now, for the people that don't know.
Run an IAX phone.
IAX is one of the codecs that asterisk runs, right?
Yes.
In fact, it is the codec, so to speak, because it is the internal asterisk codec.
And he was giving you the capability of calling anywhere in the United States for free to a POTS line.
Mm-hmm.
And people abused it.
Yes.
For already, war dialing and stuff.
It's mm-hmm. already down.
And he disabled the capability of being able to do that.
So you got to use it for one night.
Yeah, I called my mom. It was great. I called my mom. I used, what did I use? I think it was K-Phone. Is that it? K-I-A-X. Yeah, that's the one that Ubuntu wants to keep uninstalling because of a dependency.
K-I-A-X?
K-I-A-X. It worked great. And I went to go call it about an hour later. I was on the Infonomicon forums. We were trying some stuff out, and it wouldn't work anymore. He had disabled that capability.
It was all your fault,
man. That's unfortunate. And it's like Dan said, it was because of people doing war dialing and stuff like that on it, which is not cool. However, I happen to have some inside information on that. And the guy's name is Brett McDaniel, by the way, I believe. Anyway.
Go ahead.
Was it Brett? I don't remember. Anyway, what he said, he's on one of the asterisk users list that I'm on.
Someday we're going to mute those dial tones.
What he said was, you know, that people were abusing it, and that's why he kind of shut the capability down. However, he is currently working on a system and methodology for reopening that functionality again, and a way to sort of filter out the people who are doing bad things.
Yeah, he said that on a BinRed forum.
So I would expect to see it working again quite soon.
Hi, this is Peter van der Linden.
Hi, Peter. This is the Linux and Tech Show. Welcome.
Thanks. That's great. I take it this is Patrick.
Speaking.
Great.
And Link, and Dan, and Alan.
You're sorry for...
And the whole world.
You guys have quite a crowd there.
Yes, sorry for a little late there. I don't know what time Pat told you. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
Okay.
Thanks.
Great. All right. Take it away, Pat.
Peter, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here, Patrick. Thank you.
You're welcome. You've written a whole bunch of books. You've written books on C, Java, Linux, and also Practical Jokes.
Yes, that's right. I guess the Practical Joke one was kind of an outlier. But yeah, I did. I like to keep busy.
That's great. Now, you used to work for Sun Microsystems, correct?
I used to work for Sun Microsystems, right. Right now, I'm an independent software consultant.
Now, when you were working for Sun, where were you? Were you a Java developer?
No, I wasn't. I worked for the longest time in the Solaris kernel, and I led a bunch of groups of developers who worked on the internals of Solaris. But I also spent some time in the Sun compiler groups.
So you have a pretty strong background in C and C++ then?
Yeah, I would say so. And also in Java. When Java started to happen, I could see that it was going to be really, really important. So I invested some time in really getting to grips with it. And so I would say I've got a strong background in Java too.
Now, how did you get into Linux? I mean, coming from, you know...
Oh, well, I mean, it was really clear by about 1998 or so that or maybe even earlier, that Linux was the best shot that the computer industry had at competing against Microsoft. You know, Microsoft has basically been very, very bad for the computer industry. It's a kind of a single organism environment. It's destroyed innovation. Microsoft's destroyed competition. They've put many, many people out of work because there are no competitors any longer. You can't get projects funded in Silicon Valley that will compete with them. Linux is the best shot we have at restoring the computer industry to an equilibrium. So I wanted to throw my effort behind it and help in any way I could Linux be successful and help people adopt Linux.
Now, coming from Sun, you know, as an outsider looking at Sun, how their stance on Linux, it seems they've played both sides of the coin. Sometimes they like Linux, sometimes they hate it. That's the impression that I get from them. And I don't know if that's just the case because they're just playing to the audience they happen to be talking to on a particular day, or it's just very confusing as what their real intention is.
Well, I share your sense of confusion, and my best guess is that there are different factions within Sun that are trying to make their plan be the overall strategy. But until one of them wins out overall, we will see these confusing kind of schizophrenia of one week we love Linux, and then the next week here's a strategy to move from Linux to Solaris, and it's confusing.
Now, I guess the reason why you wrote your last book is you see the opportunity that Linux has on the desktop. And
yeah, I think that there is really, I mean, let's look at where Linux is. Linux completely owns the server space. They are the dominant technology there, the most successful technology, the most cost-effective. And above the server space, they completely own clustering. Microsoft doesn't have a clustering product at all. And then if you go way down to the small end of the market, the embedded end, Microsoft is really not dominant there. Linux is holding its own end up and doing great. And then it's the area in between the high end and the low end that's ripe for a Linux penetration. So these are all the poor people, the poor users who are stuck with legacy Windows systems with all the problems that they have because they can't buy anything else pre-installed in the stores. And I thought, you know, there's got to be a way to help these guys get to something cheaper and better. And so I wrote Peter van der Linden's Guide to Linux. It's a book packed with knowledge, comes with bundled with a live CD that helps people who know Windows and who want to try something else, something better, helps them engage with Linux.
So here's a quick question for you, Peter. What was it, or what is the purpose behind including Linspire with your Guide to Linux?
Okay, I'm glad
you asked. Is that a personal choice, or is that, you know, a publisher choice or something like that? Or?
Everything in my book is a personal choice. You know, I'm master of my own domain.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what I did was I made a list of all the qualities that I wanted to see in a distro that would be helpful to Windows users. So there's about 5 or 10 things that you can imagine, and you can probably write your own list, but they're things like this had to be a distro that specialized in the desktop, not one that tried to cover the server space or tried to do both. It had to specialize in the desktop. And then it had to be a distro that played as many of the file formats as possible right out of the box. So I'm talking about things like Flash and MP3s, and I don't know if you know this, but Fedora doesn't play MP3s right out of the box. And then it had to be a distro that wasn't a volunteer initiative that may go away or become quiet next week. It had to be a distro that had paid support and a team of people who were paid professionals to stand behind it and have a regular release strategy and a plan. And when I added up all these things, there are many good desktop distros. I mean, we all know the names Ubuntu, Mepis, Nopix, and so on. But there's one great desktop distro, and that's Linspire. I mean, for example, they play out of the box every unencrypted Windows media format. No other distro does that. And the reason they do that is Microsoft sued them because of their former name, Lindows, and Microsoft suddenly started to lose badly and had to hurry and settle. And the Linspire people were savvy and clever enough to press Microsoft to grant them a license to play these proprietary formats. So I think that's great.
So basically you see it as someone who, it's an introductory distro for somebody coming in from the Windows world where they have the support there and it's going to be there.
Exactly. And they have one of the most active forums of all Linux forums. You know, sometimes people disparage the commercial distros, and I think that's wrong. That's just flat out wrong. You know, there's a few elitists in every club who kind of have the attitude, well, you know, if you don't know how to figure all this stuff out for yourself, you're not worthy of using Linux. I say, take a step back. Look at the big picture here. What are we trying to achieve? The Linux world will be better for everybody and better for the industry if we can have mom-and-pop users happily using Linux. And it's distros like Ubuntu, like Linspire, that will get us there. And that's why I back them, and that's why I recommend them. You know, we have to get away from this elitist thing where, you know, if you run, you're not studly enough to run Linux unless you built it yourself, like Gentoo or Slackware. we gotta people who do have the technical knowledge have got to smooth the way for people who just want to use a PC, and there's already enough barriers in the way, and so that was my philosophy, that was my motivation, to try to remove barriers from Windows users and help them to adopt Linux.
What distro do you use?
Well, I have a multi-boot PC. I flip backwards and forwards depending on what I'm trying to do. Right now I'm installing an evaluation copy of SUSE 10, and they have one of these nice installations that you just download 60 meg or so, burn it onto a CD, and then it picks up the rest of the stuff from the internet. But I also like... I like Nopix. I've used Nopix quite extensively. That's a super distro because it really does have some great hardware detection right out of the box. And I also like Ubuntu, you know, the distro that kind of came from nowhere and had a really clean look to it. And that's a popular one too. But I also, I use the Apple Mac at least as much as I use Linux. And this is quite common among Linux power users. I mean... The support for video editing, it's just not there in Linux yet. That's still an emerging technology. So if you want to do anything with DVDs apart from copy them, you really are going to... The best use of your time is to do it on Apple. Plus, Apple is where all the GUI innovation and operating system innovation is being carried out right now.
So on one hand, you say... Linux is ripe for penetration into the desktop market. But then on the other side, we have Apple, who seems to be making incredible inroads, particularly people who are currently using Linux. Do you think that Apple's OS X poses any threat to the adoption of Linux in the desktop market?
Well, the way I'd analyze it is this. There's a certain category of user that never really get beyond half a dozen basic tools. They want to receive and send email. They don't want to be inundated with viruses. They browse a lot, and maybe they word process a few documents and run spreadsheets. That kind of user is going to be absolutely happy on Linux. And then beyond that, you've got power users, people that want to install tons of stuff and explore and tinker and build programs. Again, Linux is great for those guys. And then you've got another group over here of people for whom maybe it's professional interest, but they want to do video editing and create DVDs. And Apple is just streets ahead of any other solution for doing that right now. But most people aren't doing that. Most people are mainstream users with a half a dozen tools, and Linux is perfect for them, and it solves the virus nonsense immediately. In fact, that was my motivation for writing this book. One of my relatives called me and said, Peter, I don't own my PC anymore. The password's been changed out from under me, and I can't do any administration, and what's going on? And I looked at it, and his PC had been taken over by, you know, it was a Windows PC, a Windows 98 PC, and it's just totally inadequate, the quality of the Windows software. And so that was, I thought there has to be a better way. We've got to help this class of user migrate to something better.
Have you done any development in Linux as far as programming?
No, I haven't. I haven't done anything for the outside world. I mean, you do your own custom stuff, but I haven't released any freeware as yet. Actually, I was at a conference last week on KDE programming.
San Diego?
It was sponsored by the Open Source Desktop Workshop, yeah. in San Diego. It was sponsored by Linspire. You know, those guys, they do actually invest back in the community in a way that some other Linux companies noticeably have not yet invested back into the community. So I'm at this KDE workshop, and to my surprise, there's probably about 35 or 40 people attending it, so there's quite a high level of interest. And I was really quite surprised at the level of sophistication of the tools that let people write KDE applications. It was very encouraging to see that, and it was very encouraging to see the level of knowledge that was there as the community came together to share information and techniques and trends and roadmaps. So that was a good thing.
Now, that conference, Trolltech was the other main sponsor, right? Obviously because they're using Qt, right?
Yeah, I believe Trolltech did sponsor it. Yeah, there was quite a bit of dialogue around Qt. There's a new release of Qt either coming out or just about to come out. So there was a high level of interest in that. This was the first in what's hoped to be a kind of a traveling roadshow or series of desktop workshops on Linux, which I think is a good thing. There's a lot of interest in this area. I just read at Slashdot today that there's a Linux standard-based desktop standardization initiative. So that's great. You know, that's badly needed so that we can have some more harmonization between distros and find that we don't need to package applications for individual distros, that we can find some common method of packaging and it will install and work across all distros. We need to get to that level of sophistication.
Yeah, I heard that the Linux standard base is not really doing so well.
Well, yeah. I mean, the issue is that early on it was dominated by Red Hat and Red Hat partisans. So they wrote a bunch of stuff in there that is essentially the Red Hat way of doing things. So there's a single packaging mechanism, and it's RPM. And RPM is a good packaging technology, but it's not universal. And, of course, it's very hard to try to persuade people to change once they've locked into something. And so LSB is not making progress as fast as we like, but that doesn't mean the problem is unimportant. It's an important problem. And in practice, what a lot of people do is pick one distro and stick with it and sort of finesse cross-distro compatibility problems. But these are going to, you know, you can't improve a problem by ignoring it. And I would like to, I think it's a measure of maturity in the Linux world that when we do have true standardization, but it's not something that will affect individual users, mostly.
You don't think?
Well, like I say, I think most users tend to pick one distro and stick with it and work within its limitations. Take Linspire, for example, the issue of adding software. Linspire has done a bunch of stuff to make it very simple for Windows users, to ordinary Windows users, not power users, to add software. They have a big software repository, like a warehouse, a software warehouse, that they call Click and Run. It's accessible through a web server, and it's a subscription-based model, $20 a year. And basically, instead of doing what you and I do to install software on Linux, which is go to SourceForge, download the source, build it, configure it, install it, they have a one-click install. You just search for the general application area, and that will give you a list of alternative programs that do that thing, and you can try them. So you do an installation with one click of the mouse, no building, nothing, and it just installs on your system. It's perfect for Windows users. I mean, that's just awesome. Microsoft has said they're going to copy this kind of internet-based installer. They're going to have something like that in the Vista release. But that's perhaps a year away at this point, maybe a bit less, 2006 sometime.
I mean, the whole thing with Linspire is a lot of people attack Linspire for what they're doing and their commercial distro that charges. But I'll give them credit where credit is due. They are the first company that's really making the pre-installed Linux machine a reality. You know, we talk about, you know, HP or Dell having pre-installed Linux. You know, they're not stepping up. Linspire is stepping up to do this.
Yeah, and I think that's significant, that it's not a PC hardware vendor who's stepping up to this. And the reason, of course, is the spiffs and the incentives that Microsoft pays as long as they don't ship more than a tiny fraction of non-Windows PCs. All this stuff should have been made illegal when Microsoft was found to be abusing its monopoly, but the government dropped the ball and the industry has to live with the consequences. And so it's significant that it's a company outside the hardware vendor industry that's making all the running here. And I think you're absolutely right. To give ordinary users the best possible Linux experience, they have to get Linux the same way they got Windows. If they had to install Windows on a bare PC, they'd go nuts. I mean, look at what's involved in installing Windows. First of all, you have to take the machine off the net because otherwise it will get rooted before, just about as soon as you finish the install. Then you have to do the installation. It's an hour and a half. No. Then you have to add in the security patches. Then you have to reinstall your applications, then your data, then the application patches, and then finally, it's 2.5 hours later, you're ready to go. Ordinary users aren't ready for that. This is why it's critical to the adoption of Linux that you can buy it pre-installed. My local Fry's, large electronic retailer, sells pre-installed Linspire Linux machines for $150. You just can't beat that. But none of the tier one vendors are doing that. Drives me crazy.
You know why?
Absolutely, I know
why. We know why.
It's the kickbacks that Microsoft pays them, which in some cases makes the difference between being profitable and not profitable. So they're kind of calling the tune for the entire industry here. It's bad.
What do you think would open up the floodgate, so to speak? I mean, what is it going to take?
Well, first of all, I think that the movers and shakers in the open source world have to throw their support behind the distros that have the best shot at doing something on the desktop. And that means not disparaging Linspire, not disparaging distros that provide professional support, but actually getting behind them and helping. And then I think we just have to keep plugging away at what we're doing. I mean, the apps are there. One idea I've heard is, let's try and move users to the applications on Windows first, and then when they're happily using Thunderbird for email, Firefox for browsing, OpenOffice for their office suite, then you just swap out the legacy Windows operating system for underneath, plug Linux in, and they won't even notice that they've got something better, more reliable, and cheaper. I think that might be a good approach.
Show them that the applications are superior, and then just change the operating system underneath.
Yeah, exactly. Get them using a whole stack of open source type apps. I mean, OpenOffice 2 is about to come out. That's a really stunning accomplishment. It's got improved compatibility with all the Microsoft proprietary formats. There's just been a very big win in the state of Massachusetts saying, no, Microsoft, we don't want to be locked into your closed document formats of files. We insist that you use open format for the files, and if you're not going to do that, then we can't accept your software. And these guys, I think we're going to see that. That's an increasingly common position from government. It's already happening in Europe, in Vienna, in Munich, in the city of Paris, and we're going to start to see that happening more and more in the U.S., and that's a good thing. So there'll be what I'm saying here is that there'll be a grassroots, user-led application initiative which will position us to let people use Linux too. So that's the way I think it will shake out.
It seems the adoption is happening faster outside of the United States, obviously in Europe and also in South America and Africa and Asia. It seems that companies in this country are going to have to play to the tune of everywhere else in the world, it seems.
I think that's a good insight. And we shouldn't forget that in Europe, Linux is seen as a European technology. I mean, that's where it originated. And so people feel they have a bigger stake in it. although you know we don't have that perception here, and perhaps they're more open-minded, they're ready to adopt. But yeah, it's basically a global initiative going on here, and it's hard to be optimistic about Microsoft's long-term chances. You know, Microsoft is fighting a losing battle here. There's a tidal wave coming in of a better way of doing things, and they're fighting a rearguard action. Their normal techniques of leveraging their monopoly just don't work. They're going to have to reach an accommodation in the end with Linux, but whether that's going to take 5 years, 10 years, 2 years, it's hard to say. But I'm confident that will happen in the end, that Microsoft will either have to offer their applications on Linux, or they'll have their own distro, probably. But that's some way off, and I'm just kind of envisioning it, not predicting it.
It seems that Microsoft has so much riding on Vista, you know? It seems the confidence has eroded quite a bit in terms of Microsoft, and depending on how Vista comes out and it's how it's perceived and how well it does, I think that's a key point that's going to be coming up pretty soon.
You really think that's going to matter?
That's an interesting point you raise, Patrick. Your voice is breaking up for me a little bit. I wonder if you could elaborate on that.
I mean, it seems people are fed up with Microsoft, and it seems the perception is that they're not. You know, Microsoft isn't seen as the undefeated behemoth. You know, they really have to go out of limb to make it work and improve it. You know, it seems they're competing more with Apple, and Linux is very close. You know. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think Microsoft have painted themselves into a corner. I mean, there are very, very few companies that are stupid enough to partner with Microsoft at this point, because everybody's seen what happens to you. You're pillaged for your knowledge, and then you're thrown off, and your market is plundered. And people are, they've gotten wise to the techniques now, and they're not willing to stand still for it anymore. So, yeah. But I endorse what you say about Apple. I think the innovation coming out of Cupertino is stunning, and the productivity of those guys is amazing. I was, like everybody else, I was very surprised when Apple announced that they were going to switch to x86 processors. I'd nurtured a secret hope or desire or wish that Apple was going to partner with Intel and make a different and sane architecture instead of this bizarre complexity of the x86, which seems to have run out of steam megahertz wise now. But it's equally good that they're going to go to x86 based products. I can't wait till the first ones come out, probably in the summer of next year, about 6 to 8 months away. I'll buy one at once, evaluate it, and then we'll see some interesting performance work, because you just know that the Apple guys are going to be going, throwing everything they have at it to prove that what they've been saying all along, that their operating system is faster and better, to make that be true. So I can't wait to see that. I mean, look at the rate of innovation of Apple. They turn the operating system, they release a new release about every 6 to 9 months, and a significant one about every 18 months to 2 years. Microsoft goes 3, 4, 5 years in between releases. So the pace of innovation is much faster from Apple, and the products that you get are better.
But on the flip side to that, I mean, Apple is a very closed company. In some respects, more closed than Microsoft, it seems, at times.
Sure.
And they're not, you look at, like, their iPod and iTunes, and, I mean, they have to begrudgingly put it out for Microsoft, but you can't run iTunes on Linux unless you're running it through crossover Office, or you can, I think, what, PY Music or Sharp Music. Now, has that stopped functioning properly, Pat?
I tried Pi Music, like, a few days ago, and I wasn't able to access the catalog. It was working not even a month ago.
So, I mean, one of my concerns with Apple is, yeah, they're really gaining some steam there, but they're still, I don't know if we're trading
there's
one
some
evil
aspects
for another.
Of their technology that are not open, and I agree and acknowledge that. I certainly, I don't condone it, but I can see how it's necessary. They're not masters of the content. Jobs succeeded in doing the impossible. He basically lined up the record companies behind a reasonable online deal, and he had to make some compromises to make that be possible. And the limitations, the digital restrictions that you're talking about, are one of those compromises. In the areas where Apple has full control, they've done much, much better. You can go to Apple's website and download the source code for the kernel. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't realize that. Obviously, everybody knows it's just BSD, Unix, but, you know, they keep that online for downloads.
It's a mock microkernel. It's not BSD Unix. And I have issue with your statement about Apple's innovation, too, because what they did with OS X is they simply copied, in essence... I admit they did improve on it a little bit in a proprietary manner, but they copied, in essence, what has already been available to free Unix users like Linux and BSD and what have you for many, many years now. And
that's right.
And then, furthermore, to compare them against Windows, what you're saying in comparison against Windows is that Apple is an even more shrewd marketer than Windows is, because they managed to remarket the exact same or almost the exact same software which they have copied from a free Unix system over and over and over again every 3 to 6 months for another $150 without changing it. So,
you know, people can choose whether they want to upgrade or not. I myself, I'm not running Tiger. I'm running the release before that, Leopard.
Absolutely, but what is it that's... What is it that's more innovative about... The last one is Tiger, right? OS X 10?
Yeah, the most current
OS 10.3. What is more innovative about that than the first release of OS 10? I mean, other than...
Well,
I'm sure they have some bug fixes.
One thing I would say is the metadata searching. You know, a lot of people really love that. It's a little utility called Spotlight, and it builds up a search database of all your data. So I'm talking about things like text strings within files, file names, dates changed, and here's a cool one, EXIF information in your image files. So, you know, there's really nothing else like that. People can make the trade-off for themselves. Is there enough new in each of these releases for me to get it or not? And if not, don't get it. You know, the point, and your system will continue running fine and you won't have to pay for it, and other people say, yeah, I want to be on the leading edge. Give me all that stuff. Let me pay into the Steve Jobs retirement fund. And they buy it. The point is that we have choice about these things. And that's the way I think it should be.
Sure. Sure. My whole point is on the advocation grounds for the open source, free and open source software, though. And that's one of my stickling or haggling points with Linspire, is that they, in my personal opinion, I've taken a look at their version of Linux, and it looks to be a fairly nice version of Linux. However, they don't necessarily play fair, you know, with the other versions of Linux. They have some proprietary stuff going on. They don't necessarily, you know, want to let you get in and get down and dirty with what they're doing over there, and I just find it little odd.
They have three value propositions to their distro, mm-hmm. right? One of them is their distro is straight Debian Linux, okay? The second value proposition is that they have one of the most active customer forums going, and they have an employee whose job is to keep a positive atmosphere in there. So if someone comes along and says, you're an idiot for not knowing that you have to format a file system onto a partition before installing, right? This guy will come in there and apply some soothing balm to everybody. So nobody has to be an idiot for not knowing something. Then the third value proposition is this click and run warehouse, mm-hmm. which is a service, and you pay for it. I mean, if you take away the customer forums and the click and run warehouse, then it's just a distro like any other paid distro, like SUSE or Red Hat or any of them. And people don't gripe about having to pay to get those. And I don't think there's a reasonable complaint about having to pay to get Linspire. People can choose whether they want the click-and-run service or not. For those who want to save the time and have the convenience, have it. If you don't, just do all your software installation the old-fashioned way.
So
it's all about choice.
What is your personal opinion then about the level support that you get from Linspire for the money?
They don't have paid support right now. So the major route that you'd go for support is the customer forums. And almost all user problems can be straightened out in the customer forums, all the things that newbies trip over.
Okay, now wait right there. Newbies don't read, which is part of the problem they have with Linux, because Linux, you know, is different from Windows. So, you know, and it doesn't necessarily have the same feel to it. That's where new people get hung up. Asking them to read how to fix something wrong is probably not the best solution to the problem.
Right? You're right. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Right.
But this is not specific to Linspire. This is whatever distro they choose.
Yeah, but if you're expecting new people to read a forum to find out how to address a problem they're having, that's going to be issue number one. Issue number two is you're charging them money for Linux, which is free in any other case, only to provide them with software support, which they can get for free any other place as well, except for like the proprietary codex. First day with my new tongue, sorry.
So how does that differ from Red Hat, say?
It puts Red Hat in the same boat, actually. The only difference is that Red Hat doesn't have the deal where you can actually legally obtain a codex and stuff like that. See, now that I think is a really good idea. I think that's a wonderful thing. It's just the rest of it that they package into it that I'm sort of suspect about. And that's probably because I'm not entirely familiar with Linspire, because I run different distributions myself. I'm more comfortable running different distributions myself. So what I really, you know, I'm just looking for what your answer is to how good a feel for the Linspire you have and things like that.
I tried it, and I could see where they're going with it. You know, they're going for people who want, you know, an alternative to Windows. And they might not be so technically inclined, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So personally, I don't have a problem with what they do. You know, they're releasing software. They're doing InView, which is a great application. They do L songs and L photo. You can download the source code to those applications, compile it yourself if you want to. You know, they're not stopping you.
That's right. And some distros, I think Mandriver has started to bundle the software that Linspire has created. The L tunes and L songs, they call it, and L photo. They're carbon copies of iTunes and iPhoto from the Apple. The interface is virtually identical. How it is that Apple hasn't sued them, I don't know. But
well,
anyway,
the point
that is that the best possible experience for a newbie on Linux is get a PC with Linux pre-installed. You know, the major barrier that new people have is device drivers, and that's a horrible thing to be confronted with. You can't expect a newbie to cope with that, so they really need to get in a mode where this is what I recommend to people now. If you want to evaluate Linux, get one of these cheap Fry's systems. They're good systems, $150, you can't beat it.
Outstanding.
Guys, have any more questions? What do you think about Apple? They're moving away from PPC. Do you think this is an opportunity for Linux to run on those machines, you know, once OS X is gone?
I missed the first part of that question. Could you
sure.
just say
the old PPC machines that are currently running Apple OS X? There's an opportunity for people to run Linux on there. I know Yellow Dog is trying to
move in that direction. Oh, I see. So you're saying, get Yellow Dog distro and put it up on. Yeah, I mean, really, whatever floats your boat. People should do what they're comfortable with, and there is a class of user that says, I like Linux. I'm familiar with it. It's smooth and easy. It's lightweight. I'm just going to run this on my old Apple hardware. And those people are very successful. And I think that's part of the beauty of Linux, that it runs on 50 different architectures, you know, far more than any other operating system. I mean, the protocol now for any new computer that's designed in a research environment or anywhere else, the protocol is you bring Linux up on it first, and then you have access to a wealth of other software by just tapping into the open source community. I mean, it's wonderful. It's a significant time saver and productivity enhancer, and I'm all for it. And so people who are in the high-tech world, who invest in improving their Linux skills, you know, maybe by reading my Peter van der Linden's Guide to Linux book or maybe something more detailed, they are really investing in themselves, and that's a very well-placed investment, you know, to master Linux, maybe even take a professional certification if you want from the LPI Institute. These are, you know, very good things to do, and I would encourage them. So, yeah, I endorse your implicit suggestion there that it's a worthwhile investment to run Linux on whatever hardware you have available to you and to learn more about it.
I have one final question. As far as practical jokes, what should we look to do a good practical joke on somebody?
Well, I must say I kind of retired from that endeavor these days because I became the victim of too many of them.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I think the effect that you should be aiming for is just something really surprising. So just look for ways to surprise people, terrify them briefly, convince them that they've lost their data somehow. Yeah.
So these are
I hesitate to get more specific.
So these are techie practical jokes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, that practical joke book of mine came out in 1988. So, what is that? About 17 years ago, I'm horrified to think. But, yeah, even then, I put a bunch of technical-style practical jokes in there. Some of them relied on users being less sophisticated than they are these days. And, of course, that was all before viruses became the problem that they are now in the Windows world. But, yeah, live long and prosper.
Yeah. Okay, Peter, what's the all-time best practical joke? You know you couldn't get away without answering this question. Your all-time best practical joke. Lay it on us.
Okay. The all-time best practical joke was one I saw in the office environment. Are you familiar with these little Christmas cards that you see sometimes in the stores, and they play a Christmas carol?
Mm-hmm.
They have a tiny little chip and a tiny little battery in them. They're $5 or $6. When you open the card, there's a micro switch, and it plays a little Christmas carol.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are deadly.
You're familiar with them, right?
Yep.
Well, I saw a master programmer take one of these apart and take that little Christmas carol chip and fit it into his boss's keyboard. this is the best part, though. He ran the power to it from one of the LEDs on the keyboard.
Oh, man.
So that whenever the boss pressed shift, this carol would start up, and it was totally awesome. At first, the guy didn't know where it was coming from, and then he didn't make the connection with the shift key LED, and it was just totally awesome. In fact, there was a mob that formed after about an hour from the nearby offices, you know. Good King Wenceslas is great one or two times, but when you've heard it 30 times, you're about ready to burn the building down. So I live by it.
That's great.
Good stuff. Peter, I want to thank you for coming on. Thank you for taking the time.
It's been my pleasure to be with you. You're an awesome group of guys doing great things out there, and you've certainly got my gratitude and I think most other people in the open source community.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thank you.
You know, your books are really great, and I want to thank you for putting those out. Do you write all your books in what program do you use when you're writing your books?
I use VI, and
wow.
Yeah, I know, isn't it bad? And lately, I've taken to I type them in HTML. I just type the markup tags myself,
mm-hmm.
and then I throw it over the wall at the publisher, and they have that writing them into HTML makes it easy for the technical reviewers. You know, these are a bunch of guys that work with me when I'm developing the manuscript to give me feedback about you need more here and less there. So making it in HTML makes it really easy for them to read it and give feedback. And then the publisher turns it into Frame. All their books are in Frame, FrameMaker, Adobe FrameMaker.
Yes.
So that's the way I do it. The beauty of doing it with just a text editor is I can work on the manuscript wherever I am. You know, I can use a PDA, I can be on a Mac, be on Linux. It's a totally portable format. The only thing that comes close would be OpenOffice, but OpenOffice doesn't run on my PDA yet.
Exactly. And for those of you who don't know, and this is your latest book, right? Guide to Linux. Peter van der Linden's Guide to Linux. Grab it right away. It's a very good book. I happen to be a reviewer for Prentice Hall, which is your publisher. And I have a draft manuscript at home, actually, that I got to read before it was published. Again, that's Peter van der Linden's Guide to Linux. Get it over there at Prentice Hall Publishing. And I'm sure you can get it at any, you know, like any regular bookstore, Borders or Barnes & Noble, one of those kinds of things.
I got email today from one of my friends who lives and works as a programmer in Switzerland, in Geneva. Mm-hmm. And he said he went down to the local bookstore and was very surprised to see Peter van der Linden's Guide to Linux in the bookstore. He wanted to buy it for his boss. He went back to the office to get the charge card number, and it had sold by the time he returned. So that's a good sign, I think.
It is. It's a very good book.
Popular in Geneva.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks very much, guys. It's been great talking to you. Okay, good night now.
Good night, Peter.
Thank you.
Good night.
And now it's Peter van der Linden.
Ba-dum-bum.
Pissed.
Pissed what?
I'm sick of living in the unreliable world of Bash scripts.
That's right.
I can't install.
Cannot get that
Penguin TV.
Bash Potter crap.
It won't install.
Really, it won't.
It won't. I can't install it. I wanted to rub it in your face, but I can't do it.
That's
it
too
wants
bad.
Python GTK HTML bindings, and I don't know where I have all the GTK stuff, but I guess Ubuntu doesn't have a package for Python GTK HTML bindings.
It's always that one package, Dan. You're one package away.
Is everything else there? I should have libg.
But anyway, listen. While we still got we have 5 minutes left. Well, we still have a couple minutes left, right? I want everybody's opinion on this, okay? This is a personal problem, which I will share with the entire world because, hey, we're all techies when we're
personal.
Listening. Yeah, we're all techies when we're listening to this show, and, you know, what's a little incontinence? No, I'm just kidding.
Bad breath?
Well, my teeth is. My tooth
flatulence?
Is infected, so. Oh, flatulence. Dan's got that one. That's him all the way.
That's covered.
That's covered. Many times over. No, here's a question, right? I have a 12-year-old daughter, all right? And she uses this, one of these web blog services. It's called Xanga, X-A-N-G-A, all right? With
Xanga.
And a bunch of her, well, I'm not going to say friends, but a bunch of people around her age also do the same. And they, you know, they form, like, these little virtual communities and stuff like that where they talk back and forth on their weblogs, and you know how teenagers get when they first get into it. They want to talk and chat and do the thing. Anyway, she's got this weblog set up. And children around that age happen to be, I think, probably one of the most malicious species of animal on the earth. Right? They're just horrible to each other. They're very mean and nasty and belligerent and
usually ends after college.
Mouthy and stuff like yeah. Well, it ends when they have to start paying their own damn bills. That's when it ends. Anyway, there's a bunch of kids that are like ganging up on my kid and just being really nasty for pretty much no reason that I can think of. You know, just picking on her and stuff. You know, kids do that kind of shit. But of course, you know, when you're a 12-year-old girl, that kind of stuff really bothers you. So. Me being super dad, What I decided was, you know, if they're going to pick on her in school, I don't want her hanging out on these stupid sites, getting beat on by them when she's home as well. Right? Because then there's like, there's no form of respite. There's no safe zone. Okay? It's at every angle, wherever you go. I figured, all right, well, I wanted it to shut all her Zanga stuff down. And this at some other site she's on, too. And I told her that I would, in turn, like, said, I don't know why she never came to me in the first place, but I told her that I would, in turn, design a website for her.
Like her own bulletin board or something?
Yeah, I will design her a professional website, a custom professional website.
Who are you hiring?
To her, me.
I just made a dick.
It's the only, it's all I can afford, right? So I'll design this for her, but I want some, like, ideas on this, right? I'm thinking, you know, it really should be, she wants to have comments on it. Of course, they're going to have to be moderated, right? Because you don't want anybody, that's part of the problem with that Zanga thing, right? People can log on to this thing and make a user, and they can leave a comment on there that's displayed to the world before you get around to, like, deleting it. Yeah. Now, you can filter people out, but they have to be somebody that you know in order to filter out, you know, username kind of thing. Or you can just deny posts altogether, which is not really what they want to do. So I have to figure some way of moderated posting out. And then she also wants to do this IM thing. And my thought is, you know, that's not a really good thing for a 12-year-old kid to be playing with, this instant messaging. You know, we've all heard the horror stories about the creeps out there and stuff like
pedophiles.
That. So, yeah, pedophiles. I figure, yeah, Dan. No. So I figured the best bet would be for me to create, I created a PHP instant message system for work. Well, I created it outside of work and I use part of it at work. I figured I will rehash that and do that as well for, you know, something that I can get confirmation about who's on there and usernames and passwords and stuff like that for the kids to use amongst themselves. I want to know what you guys think, though, about how far should I monitor the messages on this thing. You know what I mean? I was thinking to myself on the way over in the car, I would like to keep track of what's going on. You know, I want my daughter to have her own place, her own, you know, piece of anonymity away from me and that kind of thing, you know. But how far should I go monitoring this kind of website? Should I keep my own log of, like, the comments that are left and the instant messages that are left and stuff like that so that I can review just to feel safe? Or am I being too paranoid as a parent? Or,
you got to be paranoid these days, man.
I think it's a tough call. Did your daughter come to you about this problem with the Zanga stuff?
My daughter comes to my wife with it.
Okay.
A lot.
Now, see, here's the difference.
Because I'm like the voice of reason. My wife likes to get in and have these discussion things, you know, because she's a girl.
Right.
You know, and girls like to talk about this kind of stuff. And I'm one of those staunch dads, and I'm like, well, you know, if it's a problem, we just won't do that. And that's a lot the answer that they want to hear. You know what I mean? Like, if they're picking on you, tell them to fuck off and leave you alone. And don't hang out with them anymore. But that's, you know, that's an unpopular answer.
Well, see, I think, first off, the good thing is your daughter's at least coming to your wife with that. Not you, because you're a prick bastard.
Yeah.
It's coming to you. My opinion would be, she's at that age right there where it's really, you know, kind of touchy. That you don't want to break that nice little bond that you have going there and that openness. If you're going to do any kind of monitoring, I would let her know up front that you're doing
that.
Well,
I would, right? But, you know.
Or even maybe you don't want to do any monitoring and say, look, if you're running into these types of problems, let us know.
But, I mean, it's not that I actually have to read it, right? But I would like to have, and personally, like I said, I don't know if I'm being paranoid or not, I would like to have a way where if something happens that there was a log somewhere that I could go looking through. You know what I mean? For if I think something's weird going on, I can whip through the log real quick and see if there's any, you know what I mean? Because I kind of feel a little dirty about this, like reading your kid's diary or something.
Right.
But it would still be nice if there was a reference point if there were a problem, you know?
You can run the computer in a living room with you having the power cable.
See, now that's, to me, as a as, because I know what kind of freakoids and creeps are out there on the internet, but I can't protect her from this kind of stuff forever, too. My whole thing was, I would rather her just not be on it. You know what I mean? Because I seen kids get on it and get hurt, and they get on, you know, the kids run away with 35-year-old guys and crap like that, and it happens all the time. You see it on the news every day, right? People kidnapped and shit like that. And not to mention the fact that, you know, if you don't stand over your kid, they're on some, you know, how hard is it to get on a porno site or something, you know?
Well, how about...
It takes like five seconds.
That's the reason to have it out in a family room,
yeah,
and not in,
sure,
a private,
yeah,
area.
Yeah, but that doesn't even help if you're not actually paying attention.
This is true.
No, but it still inspires the fear that she's not going to go to those places because you're sitting,
right,
in the same room.
Right. She's just go to her neighbor's.
Yeah, right. They'll do it at school, at the public library.
But and that's something you can't fully control, and you shouldn't worry too much about it, because most likely she's going to do it in your house anyways.
Yeah.
Well, what about setting up a script to do a search on keywords? And if you get certain hits on certain words, it'll report back.
Well, see, that's another idea. See, that's kind of what I'm looking for. I'm just looking for, you know, a general opinion
on
it.
Like if someone says, fuck you, you know, and you'll run a search and you get a hit, and it'll come back.
And it comes back at his pat.
Just a judge, right?
Just
a general opinion on it.
I was listening to your show, Dad. Your show.
What kind of things that you guys would do in the same situation?
Got to cut off Ben Rev.
Hey, Ben Rev is out. Bye.
They're gone. Screw it.
But, you know, it's just, it's one of those things. It's an odd problem.
You don't want to be like all over her shit. You want to give her space. But on the flip side, you don't want her to run wild.
Well, I don't want to give her complete and total reign of her own space.
Yeah, she's a 12-year-old. I mean.
Because I think she's still too young to be running around unattended anywhere. And, you know, because it's not like, you know, things aren't like they were when we all were kids, and
right,
like you could, you know, you run around your neighborhood until midnight and leave the door unlocked and crap like that. And it's not the same now. And the internet is just as much an enabler for pervs as it is for decent people.
Yep.
So, you know, no, it's kind of a
double edged sword, man.
Yeah, it's a double edged sword, and I'm just, you know, looking for ideas, I guess, from other parents online to see what kind of things they think up and what they're doing. Because, I know a 12-year-old kid, you cannot watch your 12-year-old kid 24 hours a day. You can't know what they're doing all the time. And if they really want to do something, they'll do it behind your back. And they're really good at it. So,
because they learned from you.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. You know what? I do think that, yeah, you probably wouldn't hurt to have, you know, something that you could have to go look back should a problem ever occur.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't think you necessarily have to go looking for problems right off the bat. Maybe give your daughter some space, because she is coming to you with the issues. She's not hiding them, which is a good thing. And, you know, it could happen that she runs off with a 35-year-old perv somewhere, but I don't really think it will. I think, I know a lot of those cases you have extenuating circumstances, which
probably
don't exist in your family.
Probably.
Particularly the fact, just by you're sitting here saying, hey, you know, I want to monitor and make sure that everything's going to be okay.
Right.
And keep an eye on everything is one of the big things that prevents somebody's daughter from running off with a 35-year-old pervert.
Yeah. And to that end, what kind of things do you guys think would be entertaining on a website for, you know,
porn,
10 to 15 year old
it
people?
Always brings a giggle.
Yeah, sure.
illegal
the average
sharing.
Boobie flying, yeah, through the air or something.
Illegal false.
You gotta have that little what am I listening to now, like, little thing.
Yeah,
that she could put up, like, oh, I'm listening to
mood.
Yeah, what's my mood? And
depressed.
Who farted last in the house or something? No, like, really. I see, like, the Zanga, they always, like, have that. What am I listening to now?
Yeah, and, live journal. Every mood, depressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Zanga, man. That is. I'll tell you what.
I look through some of the stuff on there, and I'm absolutely. It's absolutely deploring.
What do they got, like necrophiliacs meeting place?
There's a lot of, like, you read the ages on some of these kids that are posting on there. They're like, you know, 10 to 15 years old, and they cuss worse than I do. They cuss worse than my wife does,
they're
and that's saying something.
Do you think they heard it, man?
They're cussing. Yeah, exactly. Just like Dan says.
I
would be
people.
Mortified if it was my kid online somewhere at 12 or 13 years old saying how she was having sex with somebody. You know, that would mortify me to begin with, but the fact that she was doing it online would just drive me crazy.
Zanga is
there's your other thing. Don't give her a video digital camera.
Zanga is like the written equivalent of watching a porno with your friends and realizing it's your daughter in there. That's what it's seriously. That's what it's like.
I've never heard of this one before.
I've read of some of these things. I had to go in there because we've had problems at work.
Kids at school.
Oh, you've had problems.
I've gone through a lot of Zanga sites, and holy crap!
So, what kind of problems have you had at work with this kind of stuff?
I can't talk about them.
Give me a ballpark.
Well,
make one up
just by reading Zanga. You know, you got people will threaten other people.
Yep.
They'll
I've
really
seen that.
Tear people down.
Threatening, harassment. Now, is that something that you tolerate as a person in your school
system? So
what you're
saying
is they
act like normal teenagers.
No. It's really vicious and malicious, some of the stuff that goes on in there.
Well, that was high school
for me. It really
is.
Nobody
it's
liked
not
Alan.
Like, when we were in school, you know what? When we were in school, if you picked a fight with somebody, you went out behind the school, you kicked each other's ass, and then you were cool after that. You know what I mean?
Well, that's because we didn't have computers.
These days, it's a total information immersement. Okay, and these kids have so these kids will pick on somebody in school, and then they will go on. They will go on 50 websites to pick on them after school, and then they call all these people. They call everybody's friends up to pick on them some more. You know, and it really, really is a terribly harassing thing. And that's kind of what I'm trying to, you know, direct her away from and give her something constructive different to do than just that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I see with sites like that or with non-face-to-face communication, it really makes it a lot easier to be more vicious.
Certainly.
Sure, the anonymity. It's,
right.
You know, people don't care.
Well, they're not anonymous because they know who each other is.
Oh, yeah, they know who they are.
I mean, you got this person with their little clique of friends and this person over there with their little clique of friends, and they all start cross-posting comments on each other's Zanga sites and calling each other whores and sluts. And it's terrible.
It's really vicious, especially for kids that young. Like, I don't remember being that vicious when I was
young.
If I didn't like somebody when I was 13, I called him a dick and just left it at that, you know? I didn't bother with him anymore. Oh, don't bother with him. He's a dick. You know, now they don't do that. Now they like sick their posse on you or some shit. It's horrible.
It's the pack mentality.
It's kind of funny, but it really is. It's a horrible thing.
Yeah, it used to be.
I feel bad for kids.
You had a problem with somebody, you get in each other's face, and then that was it.
Yeah,
you still didn't like each other, and that was you got by.
Yeah, but you could hate the other person and just like avoid them, you know. And now they don't do that. They follow you around.
And plus, you know, the other part of that is. You don't know what another person was saying about you behind your back if you're not there. Now
you
can post it all over the world for everybody to see. And if you have a Zanga account, you can post too.
Right?
Are we going to have an after school special?
We should.
Tonight, a very special episode of the Tech Show.
Tech Show after school.
There's something about Amelia.
There's something about Alan. There's something in Alan's pants.
Yo-ho.
Where's your Zanga site, Alan?
Alan's got a hair.
I could see Alan's Zanga site. It would be like half set up and only one post.
All it'd say is hi.
It'd be a test post.
Hi, this is Alan's test post.
Well, I think I did that on that Yahoo 360. I put like one post on it. I was like, hi, I may put stuff on here or I may not.
You know, my
and that was it. I never put another thing on there. I don't even know what my login is anymore.
Rigney said his daughter's only 5 and I haven't had many problems. My daughter's 7. She wants a cell phone.
She keeps asking.
I'm like,
my daughter's 12.
I just gave her my wife's old cell phone.
What?
I would tell her. She can have a cell phone when she can pay the bill herself.
She's like, part of the problem is you see stuff on TV sometimes where you get cool ringtones. Or like Fox TV, Foxbox, they had like, you can dial in a number and it'll send a ringtone to your phone from, like, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or something. And she was really like, she's like, oh, I love Winx Club. I'd like to get the ring, Winx Club ringtone. Can I get a cell phone to get it? No.
I work with a guy, his daughter, I don't know, she's like 10, I think. Like an idiot, he went and he got her a cell phone. The kids sit around the lunchroom text messaging each other. He got a bill for like $300 because they're sitting around fucking sending text messages to each other all day long.
You know, I finally got my wife to get a cell phone, like a real cell phone plan, instead of her track phone that she's been carrying around for like 2 years. So what we did was the track phone's got like 30 minutes left on it. I gave it to my kid. So now she has her own cell phone, you know, even though it's a track phone. So I know she can't run the bill up on me at least, right? And she's that thing is like, it's give a cell phone to her 12-year-old, and it's like they super glue it to their head, you know, to their head and to their hand. That is the coolest thing.
Tell her it causes cancer.
Until $30 is left. Yeah,
the coolest technology that mankind ever came out with must be a cell phone or something, man. I can't wait to see what happens when the $30 runs out. what kind of thing that's going to be. That'll be right around Christmas time, probably. You know. Because I really only let her use it. I told her she got to have it for emergencies because I want to be able to call her if I can't.
Calling her friend to find out what she's wearing. That's an emergency.
No, I told her. I said if I find out that there's no minutes left on that phone and I need to call you, I'm going to be pissed off. So you better always leave 5 minutes on there for me to call you. You know,
I can't stand the slang, like the text messaging slang, the abbreviations. I can't fucking stand that stuff, man. It drives me insane.
I'd like to learn it because sometimes when somebody text messages me, it's such a pain to type everything right out.
Yeah.
Wish I knew it better. Sitting there typing in F-O-R and I could just press 4. You know, I was like, I hate text messaging anyhow.
Yeah, text messaging sucks, man.
I have email. I don't need text messaging.
All right.
Well. Anyway.
Oh, you know what?
It's 10:15, man.
We already did talk about that.
We're going to get done.
Yeah.
Because I got to go home. You know why? Because tonight was the final episode of season 2's Ghost Hunters.
That's a cool show.
And it was supposed to be really good, and I want to go see
it. Did you see the one where they went to that prison?
Which one? They've done it three times.
The one in Philly.
The one in Philly.
That's the haunted one where they caught the image of the black image.
The little black thing that ran
running around?
That was cool, that was a good one. That was cool. And they went to the Ohio State prison thing.
That one was a
dud. That was lame. But the one with the little dude running up and down the hall?
That was cool.
That was pretty cool. Anyway, thank you, everybody, for coming to listen to us. Yeah, the Linux Link Tech Show, episode 106.
Oh, you know what?
106. A
couple of things.
106.
Number one. Well, yeah. A couple weeks ago, Games Entertainment More Radio reached 100. Want to say congratulations to them. I listen to that podcast all the time. Love it.
All right. Dan says you're cool. Who was it again?
Games Entertainment Radio and More.
Congratulations.
Yeehaw! We know how hard it is to get to that number, too, you know?
So, congratulations to them. Really enjoy that. Love that podcast. The Linux, GNU Linux User Show was out of
commission
circulation for a little bit. Cause
yeah, for like a week or two. They were upgrading the servers.
The podcast network was, right?
Yeah.
What I don't understand, and correct me if I'm wrong here, if you're running a network, right, why would you take down the entire network for a week to do an upgrade? Shouldn't you, like, put whatever you're putting into place and, you know, seamlessly move over? Why knock everything down for a week?
You're asking the wrong person, Dan.
You're definitely asking the wrong person because...
we don't know what their setup is.
I've done that about 10 or 12 times, just switching stuff on the network, you know, and I'm never down for more than... I think the last time that I had to physically, manually switch everything from DHCP to static IP addresses for 100 machines, it only took me an hour.
Well, you know, that's what I'm saying. If you're going to make a major... Week is a long time. I could see maybe a couple hours, maybe a day.
Even a day.
Day is a long time.
And another thing that irritates me. I know how you guys, some of you feel about the Linux log. I like the Linux log a lot. The one thing What? Linux log. I like to listen to Linux log. What I don't like is the advertisements for GoToMeeting.com because it doesn't run on Linux. Or doesn't run on Mac either.
I have no idea what you're talking about, and you know why I don't have any idea what you're talking about?
Listen to it.
Because I don't listen to it.
You don't listen to anything on the podcast. Yeah. What was that?
The Tech Podcast Network or something like that?
It's Tech. It's here, yeah.
The Tech Podcast Network.
It doesn't run on
I love their bulletin board. Droops is like the highest poster there.
Panty wastes.
And he's berating them. It's pretty funny.
Panty wastes. If you want tech podcasting and tech web radio, you need to be here on the Tech Show.
The LinuxLink.net.
Or you can also go over, and I shouldn't say or, and you can also go over to BinRev and check out everything that they have available there, which is good quality stuff as well.
Yep.
And if on hackermedia.org.
That's right. Hackermedia 2. Hack.5. Awesome stuff. Anyway,
la, 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 la.
We got to get going, guys.
Getting late.
Listen, everybody, once again, thank you very much for joining us this Wednesday, October 19th, 2005, for episode 106 of the Linux Link Tech Show.
106.
You're nice.
Please come back and listen to us again next week.
Ciao, baby.
Oh, wait, who's our guest next week?
I might have the chief editor from Tux Magazine.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
We could talk to him about how we could start our own magazine.
That's right.
We've been waiting in the wings for like six years. You know it.
That's not a definite.
I hope so.
We'll get something going on. Perhaps, I might even have a good week next week and actually have something legitimate to talk about.
Ooh.
Maybe I'll even make the switch on my home desktop to Ubuntu.
Well, everybody else is moving off to something else. Link's coming on to Ubuntu.
The honeymoon is over.
I don't know, though. It's hard to give up my Slackware. Anyway, I got to get going again.
Well, buddy,
good night, everybody.
I'll play out the music.
Have a good one. Talk to you next week.
Have not eaten for days.
And who says you will?
Give me food.
Oh, thanks for the headphones, by the way.
When the wolves come, they die not in hunger.
But in combat, who are you?
Who are you?
I am Suatai.
Thief. Archer.
Archer. I am Arcanian, the great order of Kurlet.
So what are you doing here?
Dinner for wolves.
You know I'm gonna tap that ass, right?
Shut up.
Just shut up. So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? With my tongue brush. It's over.
That was that. Hey, Alan, have you seen Bo-bo-bo-bo-bo-bo-bo yet? Bo-bo-bo-bo-bo-bo-bo on Cartoon Network?
No.
You should check it out. It's pretty funny. It's on Magoozy, I think. It's not Adult Swim. Bo-bo-bo-bo-bo-bo-bo.
Sounds like you're having some kind of a functional problem with your speech there.
Yeah, bo 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 bo. Dingy dong dong dong, diggy dong dong. Big bad dong. Link's got a big bad dog. Oh yeah, you gotta keep it clean.
It works.
Oh, you know what? Nobody has told me whether that says, does that look right up there? I can't see it from here.
No, 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 no.
106, yeah.
Yeah.
Something, 106. 106.
WKRP.
106.mp3.
DLLTS 106.
That's right. DLLTS 106.mp3.
Hey, Alan, what's with the titties?
Web radio.
Fark.com.
What's with the titties on your website, web, Alan?
Web radio.
I have no clue. I don't normally click there, but I just like to. SBB girls. Whatever that is.
Silent but deadly?
I don't know. Yeah.
They sit it's on your head.
Sports
and fart.
By Brooks. It's sportsbybrooks.com. Whatever that actually is.
What is this, a web portal? Sorry?
Sports Bros? What?
It's like all these like weird news stories. It's actually hilarious.
I like the Onion.
Yeah. Yeah, this is like, this just gets the stories.
I like
but
the
like, the headlines are all like one-line headlines with like a little joke at the end.
Mm. Fark.
Fark.
Kind of like Hillary Clinton running for president.
the guy at work today was telling me how he would do the, he was used to do the Yahoo personals. And he said that he met this chick on there. And she said, you know, guys tell me I have DSL. And I was like, what the hell does that mean? No, dick sucking lips. Oh. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, that's a great way to introduce yourself. So I said, Alan said he has DSL.
That sounds like a bona fide offer right there.
No, I have cable.
Bonafide
offer.
Woman found half dressed and dead after she became stuck in a window of a home she was trying to burglarize.
Works in May?
Yeah.
Did you ever go to E-Bomb's World?
No.
I got some pretty funny stuff on there.
Oh, yeah, I've gone to that. Yeah, you sent a link one time with stuff from there.
I did?
Yeah.
I did?
I think so.
Was me?
Dan.
Pretty sure, but I don't have it in the browser anymore because I haven't copied any links over. But.
Dan, you've been hitting lemonparty.com lately?
That's my homepage. You know what I got? You know what we ought to do now? Because he brought it up, we had to gimp Pat's face onto one of those guys.
No doubt, man.
Yes.
We can put that on the DVD.
No thanks. Speaking of which, you got to give me those images.
Yeah, I got to tar up some stuff for you. I'll send you where it is.
Are we going to put Hot Link on there?
No.
Well, we're going to start episode
1. Oh.
Slurpees.
Yay!
This Slurpee lady is here.
All right, everybody, just stand there looking at her. Don't grab any. This is where you need to sit in about 3 minutes.
I'll be right back.
Slurpee.
It's
Slurpee.
Frost.
Slurpee.
It would not have been Slurpee. It would have just been.
Would have just been frozen.
Only frost. No,
mine's not filled up all the way. Take it back. Thank you, honey.
I would love to see her stick that right in your head.
Slurpee.
Mm.
Oh, crap. I was
Dan's
meaning to do something
Slurpee
this whole time.
Lady.
Start the stream?
No. No, are you nuts? It's too early to start the stream. That'd be starting it almost on time.
Mexico's MTV Awards canceled due to Wilma. All three trophies to be sold on a freeway off-ramp. From USA Today, most teens who have oral sex still think of themselves as virgins, conveniently forgetting the word sex appears in the term.
That's because it all depends on what is.
Yeah. Operations to correct the International Space Station orbit fails. In other news, residents of Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas advised to stay indoors for a bit.
Do you ever have a Hawaiian punch slushy?
No.
They're really good. Not that this isn't really good, but they're really good.
Oh, here's one from the Morning Call on here. Expert witness in intelligent design trial says designer could be someone other than God. Flying spaghetti monster? The door is wide open.
Yep.
Uh.
I see Judah on the IRC. Damn you guys. Since the Slurpee tradition has taken, I have now been getting cherry ices. No Slurpees around here. And there is a difference. Slurpees are indeed good.
Slurpees. This is an icy, though. With the polar bear.
It's a thing. It's good, though.
It's a Wawa.
That's all that matters. You guys probably haven't seen the new Wawa they put in, which is like, what, a mile from that, our house?
Yeah.
About that. The worst design possible for a gas station. I mean, the gas pumps are like almost on top of where everybody parks.
Awesome.
Isn't it? Do you want to come? You want to sit down? Because we got
to. I think they had a very limited space to work with because they tried to fit it on that island.
What time is it?
Is time 28?
Oh, wait, I still got a couple of seconds. Until we're on the pin rev, till we're on the pin rev, pin rev. And then I'll just slide this chair over and you can sit here and I'll.
High school radio frequency seized by Christian Network after FCC rules it's a better use of the public airwaves. Okay. It's out of Boston there.
I believe we're on BinRev now.
BinRev!
Should we?
I believe.
Should we start on time?
Yeah, Gorkon saying link it up, baby.
Right. Fire it up.
Link it up.
Fire! Fire!
Oh, my throat. All right.
Live.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I got it.
1 hour.
I'll be at 1 second. Let me just start the recording. You guys ready? Here we go. You ready?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
2, 3, 4, 5.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You hear me?
Yeah, it was just not if you can hear me. Is there anyone home?
Come on. I need some information. Please.
You know, we got to do
just the basic facts.
But you know what? You know what's funny? We all have musical talent here. And like William Shatner put his own freaking album out. William Shatner put 2 albums out. We should have a tech show album. You know? That would be hysterical.
Just say we want to put it on the DVD and have it recorded by tomorrow afternoon.
Right.
All we need is GarageBand running.
Yeah.
I have GarageBand.
There you go. Just give us a beat.
Hold on. Let me play this back. B stands for bastards.
Buckache.
What?
Bukkake. Bukkake,
yeah. Pat Bukkake. <Bukkake.
laughs> Splat.
I saw this Bukkake movie. This guy came in. He was about, I don't know, 6'2". He was an older guy wearing glasses, had a goatee. Like a reddish goatee. He had some like brownish hair.
I don't want to hear
He was
this,
wearing
man.
His pair of shirt shorts and like a, it was like a button down shirt to go with it with a collar. And he came riding up in this this blue rabbit.
Well, it's not me because I got a golf.
And the next thing you know, he gets out into this crowd of guys. All I heard was, I don't know. What?
Hello, we are doing a sound check. I am speaking through my crappy old 15-year-old mic.
All right, now let's hear how he sounds.
Try him again.
Do it!
Check 1, 2, 3. Hello.
We got to get Marble Mouth in here.
Marble Mouth.
What's he doing?
How you doing, Pat?
isn't that like toward the end of that album? We need his.
Where is he? Man. What's he doing? Where is he?
He's hustling your wife or something, man.
I don't know. He went out with the phone and grabbed the dog's tail. We got to talking about Bukkake, and then he ran in the other room.
All of a sudden, your dog starts making really big turds tomorrow.
they're white.
Oh, that's just nasty.
Worse than corn.
Oh, man.
So I went to
I got a song for tonight, but I don't know if we're going to be able to play
worse
it.
Worse than corn?
Well, no, no.
Worse than corn.
As soon as I can find it again here.
My back door broke, the storm door.
Oh, no.
So I took it off. And I went out to go buy a storm door today because my wife got paid. I drove all the way out to Lowe's, and I walk and I find, I'm like, okay, this looks like a good door, and I like smack myself in the head. I forgot to measure the door.
Oh, dude.
Forgot. So, like, I was looking online. I mean, I did some research. I figured I could go to Lowe's or Home Depot. Where else can you buy a storm door around here?
That's about it.
That's about it anymore,
I couldn't
yeah.
find anywhere else. I went to Walmart because I thought, well, maybe.
No
maybe.
Way, man.
Or maybe, like, Sears. And I type in door, storm door. And I get the doors back. So I don't need a Jim Morrison. I need a door. Although I can hang Jim Morrison's
Nobody
body
needs,
back there.
Yeah, I would help you.
Where is he?
Jim Morrison?
No.
He's Pat. Dead, man.
Yeah, I know he's dead. No, he's not dead, Jim. He's walking the earth with Bruce Lee. They're going to come back in a couple years after Elvis makes his appearance.
I don't know. I prefer to think of him as dead, actually. Because just the thought of him like making more music is absolutely horrid to me. All right,
here we go.
You didn't like the Doors?
I can't stand the Doors. I cannot stand the Doors, and I cannot stand Mick Jagger.
Keep your eyes on the road, your hands upon the wheel.
Jeez.
Keep your eyes on the road, your hands upon the wheel.
You know what? It's just the other day I was walking around and I walked past this
guy.
We're
going to Alan's house. We're going to have a real good time.
Saw this
Tim McGraw
guy selling those tasers, you know?
Oh,
no, the
cool.
stun guns.
Where?
You know, that you...
Oh, where was he...
And
because I want a stun gun.
And what I really was thinking is, you know, I really should get that. And now I know why. So that I have it here, so that when Dan tries to harass me by singing the Doors or singing Mick Jagger songs, I can just reach under the table and snag him in the chones with like 100,000 votes and just toast his walnuts up, and then I won't have to listen to it anymore. Keep your eyes on the road and wah!
It sound good though.
Yeah, it'd almost be the same.
You know what happened? If you brought in something like a stun gun or a taser or something, it wouldn't hit me. For some way, it would end up hitting Alan. It would end up hitting Alan.
It hit the server.
He'd
die
of a heart attack or something, and then that would be the end of the show. And then Pat would get hauled off to jail.
Yeah. All right. Who are we? Who's Peter van der Linden, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I actually sent a link to some of his books. He's written books on Linux.
Yeah, it's a good thing because, like,
Java,
I got to really look
C,
at that.
C++. He's actually even written the Guide to Practical Jokes.
Really?
Yeah.
Now that's interesting.
We should definitely ask him about that.
Are there any books that we can read now?
There might be one.
Because, like, I'm sorry, but I really have not had any time to do any. You know, like normal. I haven't had any time to do any research, and honestly, I didn't know who we were actually interviewing until 10 seconds ago.
Slack 10-2.
Love. Slackware. Hang on, I'll tell you.
Are we calling him through the asterisk?
We're gonna call him on the phone.
So that means, are we doing Skype out or asterisk?
Slackware 10.0. You know, here's a question for you. Do you guys think that, how bad do you think Ubuntu would run on this laptop here? Do you think
how fast is it?
Breezy would go? It's a 400 megahertz. I don't have to run GNOME on it. You know what I mean? Like,
Honestly, when I put, I have Hori on that Dell over there.
Uh-huh.
And I had to run XFCE on it. Still a little slow. Slackware would run, I think, a little faster. That's just
do
my
that, then. But you know what?
Nope, are you going to tell me?
Let's see. All right, see, here's the thing, though. Slackware is compiled for i686. Okay? Even this kernel. This is the default kernel, okay, on my laptop. Slackware is compiled for i686. Ubuntu ships with the kernel compiled default for i386. Now, supposedly, you're able to upgrade that just by doing an apt-get install Linux-686 or something like that. And that might help considerably, right?
I don't know.
Music just saying something about packing somebody's back.
Shake that heavy butt.
Yeah, it's a Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Baby got what?
Baby got back.
Oh, I thought he was saying baby got burned or something.
No, it's Baby Got Back, Sir Mix-a-Lot, but it's done by Jonathan Coltrane.
Wow.
Colton. I'm sorry.
All right.
I just thought it was
I
good.
I have that book.
Yeah.
I read the book, yeah.
What book?
The most recent one.
Peter Vanderlyn, His Guide to Linux.
Wait, what book is that that you read?
Yeah, in August.
Peter Vanderlinden's Guide to Linux.
How come I don't remember that book?
It just came out a couple months ago.
It did? I haven't read a book in a couple.
I do remember going through that, only I didn't read the, I read the manuscript. Actually, I didn't, you know, in truth, I haven't really actually sat down and do the full read on it, but I did a heavy skim on it, and it looked like a pretty good book to me.
You say that now, sir. But you will change your tune.
If I had, like, thought about it before the show today, I would have picked it up and refreshed myself a little bit.
I'll refresh you.
But, of course, it didn't.
We should probably do a sound test with Pat.
It's the thirst at request. Why do I sound low?
Hold on. And now it's time for some poetry. A real treat for you tonight. Today, tonight, whenever you're listening. It's a little something I wrote some few years back, actually in high school. It was pretty popular with my friends and some other people. And everybody who I read it to or has read it has come away with some reaction or another. I'm sure you will, too. Just to be warning, it's probably not work safe or probably not kid safe, although there's no profanity in it. The content matter may be, I don't want to say offensive, but questionable to some. All right, here we go. Dead cat. I found a dead cat on the road, all bloated and sticky. Tire grease fur matted with crimson scabs. She laid smoldering. Take a bath, cat. Your stench so fetid fogs the air, blinding me with its tangy sting. Where's your home, worm dinner? A car closes. I kick you into a polluted ditch. You skid like rain-bleached newspaper wads. The car passes, never paying us mind. So natural you look in that littered ditch amid the rotting refuse, flies buzzing to and fro, eating, mating, laying eggs in your fur. Maggots chew your flesh, give life to your bowels, animation. I cannot stop now, I must stroke your fur. Sweat-soaked, hot, and sticky like gel. Your tail, stiff and dry, I lift to raise you skyward. Worms drip from rough orifices like a summer rain. Gravity takes hold when I release you, feline. You crumble to the ground like a potato sack, splattering my leg with acidic fluids. I stroke you again. You're grainy with dirt. My fingers seek out a gaping hole in your chest. I enter. It's warm in here, wet too, like a pot of rancid stew, thick, lumpy. I withdraw my fist, filmed with syrup dripping gore, white worms, and pull my finger to my nose. Inhale. Nostrils tighten, my head reels, desires arise. Temptations cry to be appeased. Mouth opens. Fingers plunge in. Desire quells. A rush hits me. The taste, sour yogurt and mustard, lurches my gullet. Vomit erupts, blanketing you, cat. I look about. I smirk. More food for the worms. Yeah, I wrote that. I think it was my senior year in high school. Based upon a couple of true, real-life experiences, no, I never did taste a sail cat, which some people call them, which would be roadkill cat. Never tasted any kind of roadkill, but I had gone jaw. I used to go running down the road from my house every day, and one day I came upon a dead cat out there, and for the next week or so it was really pretty powerful stink. It's always sad to see a cat on the road, but, you know, it inspired me. Couple that with a few years prior to that, we were out at a restaurant, and my parents had foster kids also. So I was out with my foster brothers, and my dad always liked to spend forever sitting in a restaurant. So we went out, and it was like a steakhouse or something, and right behind the steakhouse was a railroad track, and we were out there messing around on the railroad tracks, and there was this dead groundhog. It was bloated, filled with gases and everything, and one of my foster brothers had taken a big rock and thrown it at this thing and hit it, and it squirted out, and I remember getting splashed in the leg by a few drops, and just that warm, stingy feeling. It was has never left me, I guess. It's always, and this just brought back those memories again. But I want to thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll talk to you next week. Good day. Just a side note about that. It's gone through a bunch of revisions. I'm not sure I actually have the final revision anymore. Pumps me out. But for Valentine's Day, my sophomore year in college, I gave my girlfriend, for our first Valentine's Day together, this little plaque with the dead cat poem on it. What I did was I made the plaque look like a piece of macadam, and I took a little stuffed cat and I cut it in half, and I put some red rubber bands in there and some red paint around it, and glued some rice grains to look like maggots, and I wrote the poem in red paint on the street, so, or on the road part, so to speak, and gave it to her. And we have some Valentine's Day present, huh? But she liked it, and it was a great little piece of I don't know, twisted artwork, I thought. And well, of course, we didn't last, and unfortunately, I wish I never would have given that little dead cat plaque up, because I really liked it. Ah, well, live and learn, huh?